be available just outside the door back there. All right, Donna, back to you.
We're just going to make announcements all night. Don didn't need to come. So the other thing I want to talk about is, well, Royden kind of alluded to it a little bit that, you know, one of the reasons to practice generosity is for our own sake. Because under the principle of karma, everything that we experience, we created the causes for. Whether we're having good experiences or bad experiences, it's all the result of actions that we've taken in the past. So we're extremely lucky. Everybody in this room is really lucky because somewhere along the line you created the cause to be in this room hearing the Dharma. And that's really amazing. And Kodama Center is really lucky because we've, as a community, have created the cause to have not only our geshis, but also lay teachers of the caliber of people like Dr. Don to teach the Discovering Buddhism classes. And we think that's really important for us as a community. And so as a reflection of that, we always want to just give our teachers a little offering of thank you for teaching the class. And so that's what I have for Don.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Bye. Sherry, I first met her in 87, but I had already done some Zen practice in Japan. But anyway, she, whenever she would lead a course, she'd say, she'd thank the students for showing up. And she said, thanks for showing up so I can train myself. I think that's how I feel. Thanks for showing up because it gives me an opportunity to train myself. And then, you know, hopefully something beneficial. You hear something beneficial, you learn something beneficial. Lama Yeshe, when I first asked him if I could teach, you know, meditation classes and stuff. And this is way back in 1980-ish. He said, don't stress over it too much. Just giving people encouragement is enough. So that's my job, is just to encourage you. And obviously we missed the class, one was called off, and we didn't have enough time to really go deeply into any particular kind of meditation. But seeds got planted, and it will ripen at some point. Seeds of virtue ripen in happiness, and seeds of non-virtue ripen in suffering. And I'm hoping that most of these were virtuous. You know, a lot of it has to do with motivation. Everything has to do with motivation. So let's start out and we're gonna do a little. I'll give you. Do a little Zazen, so we're going to do a little Zazen. Zazen practices that I've...
Sorry, I interrupt your Zazen. Go ahead, your lights are still on.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm wondering why. I don't know how that's...
His lights are on.
Well, you know, I had this Uber job I had to do before I got out of here. Anyway, I kept wondering why I was making that noise. All right. So we'll do this sit a few minutes before we do the prayers, because prayers don't really make any sense if we're all just thinking. So if you ever do a Zen retreat, mainly it's sitting and walking meditation, And the principal instruction for in the resonated best with me, the Soda image is where you just you sit facing the wall and you just sit. That's the instruction. So you can close your eyes and I guess another way of saying is keep your rear end on the seat, the cushion, wherever you are, and your mind with your body. And just sit. And sit perfectly still, and we'll do this for 10 minutes. open your eyes and gradually bring your attention back in the room. Now let's open the prayer books to the page 34. Again, let's think for a moment why we're saying the prayers. The motivation for the refuge, taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, particularly taking refuge, the motivation for that is threefold. So you have to, it's important to reflect on this, start saying these prayers so they have some deeper meaning than just the repetition of words. So we go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We do that for three reasons. The first is, usually they use the word, sometimes they use the word fear, like fear of the lower realms, which don't mean anything to most people here. Dread is another nice word, politically correct word. But I think it really boils down to having compassion for yourself, understanding that with the kind of minds we have, that we are going to suffer. I mean, life's going to bring it on, isn't it? There's no doubt. We're going to have a ton of challenges in this life. And then we're going to die. And at some point. So, we really need to work on ourselves to develop our minds so that when that time comes, when these challenges come, we can stay calm, connected to our heart. So, you know, like the best, sometimes people, want to argue that we need to have anger to get anything done. You have to be willing to be angry and, you know, be incensed by injustices. No, that's not true. Compassion can be a very powerful motivator for change. And so having compassion for yourself, I think, is that plus confidence. Confidence that the enlightened beings, that their teachings, the Dharma, which are the realizations of their teachings in their minds and also in your mind, and then the spiritual community. Those are the three jewels. So, again, compassion for yourself based on an understanding that we're a mess. Our mind is a mess, and we're going to suffer a lot unless we work on it to develop it. And then confidence in this 2,500-year-old tradition that it can actually guide us from our present state of confusion and dissatisfaction to gradually, step by step, to something like joy, and even beyond that, to the sublime state of enlightenment, which we can't even imagine. So that's the reason for taking refuge. And then bodhicitta is that compassion for others, doing it for others. We want to help others, guide them to their own, to achieve their own state of perfection. But we have to get our act together. We have to develop ourselves. So that's this altruistic intention based on love and compassion. That the Sanskrit word is bodhicitta or bodhicitta is often called. It's like citta, C-H-I-T-T-A. All right, so we'll do that. And we'll do the other and then we'll move on. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this is a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Radham Mandala Yatayami. So, this trying to tie up the loose ends here. One other meditation that I did want to do, I want to teach you, because on Sunday mornings at Kadamba Center, there's like an hour, I think, of sitting and walking practice. So walking meditation is much, it's not so popular. I guess that's a funny word, but not practiced so much in the Tibetan tradition as it is in the Theravada, in Burma, Thailand, Sri Lanka, places like that, Laos. So walking meditation is a big part of it, and along with sitting practice, because you want to be able to meditate, you want to be able to bring meditative awareness to every position that you're in. So it would be, you want to be able to have a meditative mindset when you're lying, when you're sitting like now, when you're standing, and you're walking. So in all positions, you would like to be able to bring the mindset of a meditative mindset. So I like what Gunaratna was saying in his book about how this is, walking meditation is a nice way to help us transition from the cushion to our real life. Now, I've done this in the Zen tradition. I've done different ways, and then in the Theravada tradition, different ways. And I'll show you. I'm not going to try to get too fancy because I can't. But the main thing is just to be aware of the experience of walking. So a lot of times I think of when we focus on the breath, we use that as the touch point, right? To bring our mind back to the breath. When our mind is wandering, we bring it back to the breath. So similarly, if we're doing walking meditation, and if we feel some connection to this person, we practice giving love. And, we can start out, in fact, you always encourage you to start out with yourself, because we have a lot of stuff on ourselves, a lot of bad, memories and conversations about ourselves. The majority of the dialogue that goes on in our head, according to people that know these things, it's not positive. So we give ourselves a pretty hard time. So we start out with ourselves, and we imagine, and we start breathing the white light from our heart out to the you that you imagine in front of you. And you imagine some kind of suffering, and be as specific as you can. Maybe you're having relationship problems or financial problems or health problems or whatever it is. Imagine that all the suffering that you can think of and as much in the form of black smoke or light comes out your you imagine yourself comes out your right nostril and comes into your left nostril, okay? And that black dark smoke of suffering, right? Because we're taking dukkha, suffering, it goes right into your heart and it destroys the self-cherishing I, which is the biggest problem, right? You know, self-cherishing, self-centered selfishness is the source of all the negative karma. So taking on the suffering, taking on suffering, which is the action of compassion, right? This is the action of compassion, taking on suffering, destroys self-cherishing egocentricity. Then we imagine our body. If this is too much to visualize, we just practice, you know, we do what we can. But you imagine your body is filled with love and light, and then out the right nostril again. And it doesn't have to go out with one exhalation and come in with one. You can take your time. You can send out this light, and it just gradually moves closer with each exhalation, and then gets to you, and that light fills you. The light of love fills you, you know, with the spirit of human kindness and love. You know, may you be safe, may you be healthy, happy, and live with ease. However how you want to describe love, you imagine that you're filled with that energy, then your negativity in the form of, and that goes in your, see, it's going out your right nostril and then your left nostril, the you that you're visualizing. Then it goes, the negativity in the form of black light or smoke comes out your right nostril, and you breathe it slowly, slowly, in like this. And then, again, it destroys all your selfishness. So we're going to practice this, but this is what you want to be able to do when you're dying. This is what you want to be able to do when you're dying. You want to be able to instead of being freaking out I would love to be practicing Tonglen sincerely, imagining, for example, that as I'm dying, that I can imagine all the living beings in the world. Now we've taken the practice beyond just myself. Imagining everyone in the world that's dying at this moment. And I imagine all of their fear and suffering and their negative karma and anything that's freaking them out. And I imagine that I take that I breathe that in the left nostril in the form of black smoke. It destroys my selfishness. And then I breathe out loving kindness that goes out to all these, you know, millions and billions of living beings that are dying right now. And it gives them peace. And they're filled with love. And then, again, we practice again, taking on the suffering of everyone that's dying. You know, because if we're not doing that, then we're freaking out. So whatever we're experiencing, we want to take that from others. Imagine, you know, if we're having fear of death, fear of our body, you know, everything that we've ever known is going to disappear in a matter of minutes. And we won't exist anymore the way we ordinarily do. That's scary. So that kind of fear, rather than being paralyzed by that, focus on others. We focus on others, and they must be experiencing this. We bring it in to our heart. That's the action of compassion, bringing in others' suffering in our heart, and then giving them love as we breathe out white light through the right nostril. So this requires, you know, You don't have to be a great visualizer, because you can imagine just countless living beings that are dying right now, because that's actually what's happening in this moment, not just human beings, but all kinds of living beings are dying constantly. And not one of them wants to die. Every one of them wants to live. So we can practice like this. Another interesting way to use this practice is anytime your mind is, your peace of mind is being destroyed by, let's say it's attachment or lust or fear, or you're stressed out or you're worried, whatever the thought or emotion is, you know, Tonglen's a great practice to imagine, oh, I'm not the only one that's experiencing this. You know, countless other beings are experiencing fear right now, or loneliness, or boredom. Think of all the beings in the world and beyond that are experiencing like boredom and loneliness right now. And you imagine that you take that in the form of white light, comes into your left nostril. I'm sorry, in the form of black smoke, enters your left nostril, destroys your self-cherishing I, egocentricity. Your body's filled with light. Then you send out this light of love and compassion, and allowing them to, you know, wishing them to let go of loneliness, let go of boredom, let go of whatever negative mind state you're working with. But anytime your mind is overcome by some negative mind state, is an opportunity to practice Tonglen. In other words, to develop your compassion and loving kindness. So very cool practice, you know, to do, you know, any time of the day. But you know, when I started doing this practice some years ago, it reminded me a little bit. I don't, you know, might not be doing Jesus justice, but when he was on the cross, as I recollect, pretty much what he was saying was, you know, I'm taking on the suffering of the world, of all living beings. I'm taking on your sins, and I'm giving you everlasting life. That sounded like Tonglen to me. Sound like Tonglen, taking on the suffering of others. You know, it just is compassion. Compassion is the state of mind that heals. It heals our anger. It heals our fear, our self-centeredness, and love also. Very strong attitude that heals. So we offer. So taking on suffering, and offering love, great practice. So let's give it a little whirl. We'll do it for a while, and you can, like when we do Dorje Kadro, I know a lot of you come on, I don't know, maybe you don't, but on New Year's Eve we have this practice called Dorje Kadro, where we have a bunch of fires. How many people have not been to Dorje Kadro? Okay. Well, we build a bunch of fire pits, and we imagine that all of our negative karma from the past year, you know, we try to be specific to remember things that we've done. We imagine that that's blocking our, you know, heart, so to speak. We imagine that in the form of this, this is what we imagine, snakes and scorpions, but it comes out our nostril, and we have little sesame seeds, and we offer that to this visualized deity called Dorje Kadro, who loves our negativities, just is totally blissed out, and really it's a fire, but it's a wisdom, we think of it as a wisdom fire. So we imagine the things that we've done in this and past lives when we've killed, and we offer those black sesame seeds, symbolizing our negative karma, to Dorje Kadro. And we can think of the times that we've stolen things and offer that, again, in the form of black sesame seeds. And then adultery. and this in past lifetimes and so on. Body, speech, and mind. Whatever negativity, whatever comes to mind is what you can offer. But you can also, one of the cool ways to do this practice is to have it be part of your Tonglen practice. So like everybody who's experiencing the suffering of dying from cancer right now, you know, I want to take that into my heart and have it have that negativity, you know, sort of merge with these seeds which symbolize that negativity and let it go. And then we imagine everyone is suffering from AIDS. You know, everyone is suffering from AIDS. We want to bring that suffering into our heart and up merges with the seeds, and we offer it to Dorje Khadra. If you have cancer, this is Lama Yeshe said, if he had cancer, this is a practice he'd do. He'd imagine that cancer in his body and giving it some form. And I don't know exactly. He just said he'd do Dorje Khadra, but I'm imagining this is what he'd do. He'd imagine that cancer, well, say it's lung cancer, that cancer coming out, merging with the seeds, and then letting it go. Imagine letting that cancer come out, merging with the black sesame seeds, offering it to the wisdom fire, Dorje Khadra, and disappears like that. So you can imagine, your family members that are suffering from whatever problems, you know, relationship problems, monetary problems, health problems, whatever it is. It's really important to work with those people that are close to you. So when you're doing Tonglen practice or this Dorje Khadra, you imagine that their suffering enters your heart, and then you can give it away. So, but right now, let's work with, let's just start out with ourselves, because that's a good place to be. Start out with ourselves. So you can imagine a replica of yourself. And as I said, it could be you. You can even imagine yourself when you were a younger person, like 6, 7, 8, 10, 14. Sometime maybe when you were having a particularly hard time, or maybe you were the victim of some kind of abuse, and that little child that you imagine yourself as, you look at that child and you think of the suffering that he or she might have experienced or did experience, and you imagine that in the form of black smoke, and just take it, imagine that it's leaving that child's right nostril, and gradually, you don't have to breathe it in with one breath, but just gradually imagine that dark, I keep saying smoke, but whatever, that dark smoke, it gradually comes right to the tip of your nostril, and you breathe it in, and it goes right down and destroys, at the center of your heart, destroys your self-cherishing, the source of all of our suffering, completely destroys it. Like a rock being smashed, or smashes self-cherishing. And then we're liberated. When self-cherishing is gone, our body fills with the light of love. And we imagine that we give that light gradually. It could be with, you know, you could use 5 or 10 or whatever, how many exhalations you want. Imagine that white light going out, going out, going out into the left nostril of this small child. And maybe telling that little boy or girl, you know, it's okay. You know, you can even talk to yourself while you're doing this. The you that you're imagining, that, you know, it wasn't your fault. It's okay. That happened then. And now, you know, you can make new choices. You're an adult. And you send that person that you envision in front of you, love, love and kindness. You know, when meditation the Buddha taught was called the metta, M-E-T-T-A meditation, and it's a lot of variations on it, but you know, one way that I like is that you just four lines. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you be happy, and may you live with ease. You could actually, as you send that white light, you might think to this child or this adult or whoever, may you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And then you want to imagine that they got it. You want to use your imagination that they actually received your love and it, and they benefited from what you just did. Then you repeat the process again. You bring to mind some kind of suffering that you've experienced. And again, comes out the right nostril of the you in front of you into the left nostril of the you that's sitting here. Again, white light out the right nostril, gradually going in the left nostril of the you that you've envisioned in front of you, completely filling you with loving kindness. So again, the action of compassion, taking on the suffering. Giving love is the action of loving kindness. Giving happiness, giving this white light energy, is the action of giving love. So we practice this for a little bit. Let's say 10 minutes. And if once you started with yourself, if you want to switch to somebody else, that's fine. You can think of some other people or a person. I just stick with one person now. That's suffering, a good friend, somebody that you feel close to. You imagine their suffering, and you're taking on their suffering, giving them happiness. is yet to happen. You can imagine that if you're visualizing yourself, that you take that suffering on you now. The suffering that you're going to experience we've all experienced aging. Many of us have experienced sickness, some more serious than others, and eventually we all are going to experience death. So these are things that everybody experiences. Imagine that suffering and bring that into your heart, destroying yourself, cherishing, and giving this light of love and happiness and peace to the you. Any questions about anything? I'm not promising I'll do it right, answer it right, but I'll try. Go ahead.
Thank you. So when we did the Thursday class, I missed the last one, but the monk came. I don't remember how to say his name. Yes, he said he gets sick when he visits some places, like hospitals or prisons and stuff.
Right.
So, although he's a big monk, and some of us may not be that strong to hold other people's negative energy and destroy it and then send it out. So can we do without bringing it in? Can you do external? Or how do you become strong to hold their energy?
I don't know. I think it has to do with practice. It reminds me, that is a good question. Thank you for asking that. You know, I remember this guy who's, I think he must have written 20 books in Tibetan Buddhism. He was the Dalai Lama's first translator when he came to this country. His name was Jeffrey His name is Jeffrey Hopkins. And you know, he... Jeffrey Hopkins, yeah. And I think Jeffrey told me this, that, you know, there was some monk, somebody asked the monk the same question. He said, like, when I go into a hospital or something like that, or if I just think of somebody who's sick, what happens if I actually get the cancer? Like, you're visualizing taking on their cancer, right? Somebody, a good friend who's got like cancer, you imagine like you're breathing it in, and then you imagine I've taken their cancer into my heart and destroyed my self-cherishing, and now they're free, they're cancer free, and then I breathe out, you know, white light of love and happiness, and they're joyful, but now I have cancer. You know what the monk's answer was? Fantastic. Wow, you've been able to take away somebody's cancer. You know? I mean, you've given up your life for somebody. Fantastic. You destroyed your selfishness. Fantastic. That's what he said. It was not the answer that anybody was expecting. Yeah. So, and Jeffrey used to tell... You know, he told me whenever I go into a hospital, I don't go into hospitals as much anymore, but I see but Robbie, you know, Robbie Watkins is the center director. You know, he and our business partners. And he put a little sticky note on where I keep my charts, and it says Tong Lin. So, like, whenever I walk in the exam room, try to practice Tong Lin. Imagine that even before I say a word to somebody. Now, I don't remember it very often, but I do remember it now that Robbie's put the sticky note up there. But I imagine I'm taking on the suffering of that patient, and I'm giving them freedom from whatever illnesses or problems that they're having. I'm still here. might be dying soon, but, you know, it's... So I think we just do what we can do. Do the best we can do. You know, if you don't feel like you can take on the world's problems, just take on, you know, the problems of one person. Maybe yourself. Start small. Then build up. And, you know, maybe later on you can actually do this. I think it builds courage. You know, when we think, as if we practice taking on suffering, the action of compassion, isn't it? We say the definition of compassion is, may you be free of suffering and its causes. Well, here, we're imagining visually, visualizing that we're actually doing it. So that's helping us to develop not only the wish compassion, but the action of compassion. And then love is the wish that others can have happiness and its causes. And as we give others, you know, our white light energy of love and kindness and so forth. That helps us develop loving kindness toward others. So we're practicing it using this particular visualization technique. Loving kindness or compassion and loving kindness. Compassion, loving kindness. So, again, it doesn't change anything. If people look the same, you look the same, you go, well, that didn't do anything. But maybe it did. You know, seeds got planted. And maybe the time will come when you'll be able to, you know, take on somebody else's suffering and do it in a selfless way. Where you wouldn't have been that strong before, maybe you will be then. Who knows? But the practice is practice. That's why we call it practice. The practice of Buddhism. All right. So, anybody want to tell me what the definition of, here we are at the end of a meditation course. I don't even think Gunnarada talked about it in his book, and Sanghikata did too, but what's a good working definition for meditation? Anybody?
Contemplation.
Pardon?
Contemplation.
Contemplation, okay. That's part of it, definitely. I might want to, I have a definition in my head, so you can't read my mind. I'll tell you what I'm thinking after you tell me what you're thinking. Yeah.
I have a question also about the Tonglin, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. I think about it as practice of the calming of my mind.
And that is part of it.
I did have a question about the Tonglin and the Dorji Khadro thing.
Okay, I'm going to hold off there right now because I want to get this we're coming up on the end of the class, so I just want to get this question answered. So if you take the quiz, you'll have the answer. Yeah, go ahead.
To miss a mental process where you observe, you're observing. One part of the mind is observing the others, the other parts of the mind.
The mind is observing the mind itself.
Yeah.
I think that's happening. And the mind, by the way, is not a thing, is it?
No.
It's not solid. We talk about the mind like it's like a thing. It's just, it's also changing from moment to moment. There's a continuity of experience that we label mind. There's no thing or place that we can call mind. It's just our continuity of experiences that we label mind. All right, go ahead. Any more definitions? Yeah.
Is it becoming familiar with our mind?
Yeah, it's familiar with the mind. But here's the definition, the textbook definition that is because. We can be familiar with our mind and yet it not lead to nirvana or enlightenment. And we can contemplate and we can do all kinds of things. We can get very calm and relaxed and actually blissed out. But it doesn't necessarily change our mind permanently, you might say. So the definition is building up beneficial habits of mind. Building up, cultivating beneficial habits of mind. What beneficial habits of mind are useful to cultivate? Awareness, mindfulness, right? This is what we've been focusing a lot on. Loving kindness is another good, compassion, wisdom, inner strength. Anything that's a beneficial state of mind, we can use meditation to help us cultivate that. So, we've been talking primarily about two kinds of meditation. We've been talking about the concentration meditation, which I think for us beginners is really a good practice, just to focus on the breath. You know, do that. do that for a couple of years even, just to get your mind settled down. You know, if you do 10, 20 minutes a day, more if you can, do it twice a day. Just try to get our mind calmed down. Now, you don't have to have perfect concentration to develop insights and wisdom, but you need to have at least decent concentration. Otherwise, our mind's all over the place, isn't it? And then the other kind of meditation that we've talked about is like contemplative meditation. We call it, the Tibetans call it analytical meditation. But you know, Vipassana is similar. It has features that would be, you know, when you become aware of impermanence and dukkha and no self, that takes a there's analysis of the experience of your mind that gives you that awareness. But in the contemplative meditations, we've done bunches of them. We've done on developing bodhicitta. Remember how we talked about equanimity, and then everybody wants to be happy, nobody wants to suffer, we're all equal, and then the faults of self-cherishing selfishness, and the benefits of cherishing others, and how all happiness comes from that, and then exchanging the attitude of self-cherishing for cherishing others, and then practicing Tonglen, where we actually practice taking on suffering, giving happiness, and then this, what's called the supreme wish, where we vow, even though we know we can't do it, we vow to like save all sentient beings from suffering and establish them in supreme enlightenment. You know, that's the messianic vow of the Bodhisattva, which of course he or she can't do yet because they haven't developed their own mind. And then bodhicitta, this awakening mind, we realize that we have to develop ourselves. We have to eliminate our faults and develop our positive potentials. And so we then imagine that we embark on a path of purification and building up these positive mind states. It's like that. So those are kind of analytical meditations. And for example, the one that's recommended, but we haven't done it, but we've talked a little bit about it, but somebody's talked to me a little bit about death and dying, but that's a big meditation in our tradition, where we try to, become aware of the fact that we could die any minute, any second. You know, like everybody dies, the time of death is uncertain, and the only currency you can cash out at the time of death is spiritual realizations. The compassion, love and kindness, the positive karma that's created, that's the only currency. Your 401k, all the fun places you've been, all that stuff that we've lived our lives for, no use at all. Probably a big problem. Developing our mind, our heart and mind, it's the only thing of any benefit at the time of our death. So that's another kind of analytical meditation. And it's said that a really good meditator remembers death at the beginning of meditation practice, in the middle of meditation practice, so in the beginning, so there has some incentive to practice with some enthusiasm. In the middle, so they don't go deadhead and forget where they are, but to keep the energy going. And in the end, to remind them to dedicate the energy, the positive potential for supreme, for their happiness and the happiness of all beings. Not just self-centered, but, for all living beings. So, being aware, death awareness, very powerful practice. And that's getting back to that monk in Thailand. Remember what he said? Impermanence. There's gross impermanence, which is this body getting older and degenerating and eventually dying. And everything else around us too, by the way. Nothing, probably 100 years, 200 years, whatever. No telling. It'll all be gone. Everything is in a constant state of decay. Not to depress you, but it's just a fact, isn't it? It's just a fact. We need to be in tune with reality. And so being aware of subtle impermanence and gross impermanence. So helpful for our mind. Just having that awareness constantly. Okay, so I'll stick around and answer your questions, Dwight, or any other questions, I'll try. But let's do the dedication. So we have people that want to get out of here. They got to get home. They got jobs tomorrow and sleep to be gotten. So we'll go to Shanti Deva's dedication on page 246. Shanti Deva was this great Buddhist saint. Can't tell you when he lived. It was a long, long time ago. But his specialty was really had to do with bodhicitta, developing this awakening mind. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, attain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid of a little with the mind weighed bound by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, so thank you.
If the completion card looks okay, I can run copies of that real quick. But I did want to warn everyone, oftentimes when there's this much rain around here, as you exit the Kadampa Center and make that right, right under that railroad bridge, it does tend to flood. I don't know if that's happening tonight, but it might. If that does happen and it's flooded under the railroad bridge, we have to make like a left turn out of Kadampa Center and go over that small median. Very dangerous, but I guess it's less dangerous than driving through floods. So, just be aware of that. And for those of you that are staying for the discussion group, keep that in mind when you guys leave tonight, too, because if this rain keeps up, it's a very, very good chance that that area under the train bridge is going to be flooded. Okay?
It was really coming down, as everybody knows. By the way, I want to thank Linda for her support and for making Discovering Buddhism happen, because she's keeping all 15 of these courses going and making sure that the doors get opened and locked and, keeping us all straight. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And lots of other help is involved, too.
Yeah. But anyway, thank you all for giving me a chance to practice and best of luck with your practice, wherever you end up.
Thank you,
yes.
Don.
Go, Linda.
Is this okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.